Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are right smack dab in the middle of what Kirby Smart calls phase three for his football program. You may remember him talking about this back after G-Day. You know, he kind of references the beginning phase of what the football calendar looks like, kind of moving into the spring and then getting to this point where we are right now. As a matter of fact, he actually probably says it better himself than I do paraphrasing it. So let me let you hear what Kirby Smart did say when he was asked after the G-Day scrimmage, hey, what's next year for your football team? What happens now in between this point and the calendar and when the practice begins in the summer and the games start being played in the fall? And, well, Kirby Smart said this.
It's phase three. I mean, it's phase one is get back from the bowl game, work out hard, build muscle, you know, get strength, stamina. Phase two, spring practice. Phase three is Maymester for some, chance to go home. For others, it's a chance to stay here, work out, rehab, get stronger, mentally prepared. Obviously, part of phase three is bringing in the new signees who will be here soon. But for me or our staff, it's a lot more about recruiting because we go full force recruiting as soon as next week sometime. I think midweek we're going to go out recruiting, and I'm not allowed to do that, so I'll be doing in-house stuff, speaking engagements, all the stuff you guys love to come to.
Full force recruiting is a great phrase. I love that. It's the kind of thing that makes for a nice, juicy headline. UGA on the way for some full force recruiting here in the spring and the summer. But as regular Georgia fans and regular listeners to Dog Nation Daily, you're kind of aware of, though, that full force recruiting is kind of hit a bit of a speed bump here over the last few weeks, last couple of months. And we've chronicled this well here at DogNation.com about the fact that it just doesn't seem like right now that Georgia's necessarily in the mix for all that many top four and five star prospects for the class of 2018. A lot of these guys are already committed to other schools. A lot of these guys seem to be taking, a bit of a standoff approach to Georgia right now. And, you know, I think most of us are kind of understanding the reason for that. I think Jeremy Birmingham, the analyst from Land of 10.com, who was on Dog Nation Daily a couple weeks ago, probably did a pretty good job of kind of summing up exactly why it seems like Georgia's kind of gotten off to a bit of a slow start with its 2018 class. Here's what Jeremy had to say.
I think, honestly, the reality is that Kirby Smart came in and there was a lot of positive momentum when he took the job, and as there normally is, there's a coaching change, there's sort of a swell of emotion and support and guys jumping on board and saying, hey, we're going to be the group to fix this. But the reality is that, hey, the results on the field weren't entirely great a year ago, and I think people are kind of in a wait-and-see mode to see where things go with this new group. Georgia has as much talent as anybody in the country, in the state, and Kirby's reputation is really good. The recruits love him, so I don't think it's going to be a problem that lasts for too long. But there is certainly and understandably some feeling like, hey, maybe we should see how this season goes before we dive too far in.
I think most fans are aware of that. I think we even talked about that on yesterday's episode of Dog Nation Daily, that there's a notion of the really good things that fans want. They may have to wait a while to get them. Some big wins on the field and have those big wins entice recruits. I think the average Georgia fan is pretty well aware that that's the kind of thing that you may have to wait into the fall to actually see and actually experience. And a five-star prospect has kind of confirmed what many Georgia fans already think and what Jeremy Birmingham just described there. But in the midst of confirming that, also kind of provide some words, I believe, that really provide Georgia fans for a lot of hope for how this 2018 class might still come together. You may have read this from KJ Henry at DogNation.com when Jeff got some quotes from him going back to last weekend at that open qualifier up in Charlotte. KJ Henry does have Georgia in his top 10 right now, and I think he describes Georgia as kind of one of those up there schools. And what Jeff Sintel, like a good reporter, would ask, what Jeff asks him is, okay, so what would Georgia have to do to kind of climb even higher in your mind than that? The five-star defensive end thought about that question, then answered it this way. He said, in order for UGA to keep moving up, and I'm obviously reading from DogNation.com, Henry says, they just have to have a successful year. They had a good year last year, but I see them in my eyes as going to be an elite program. They have to live up to that standard. I think they can be. Winning would be a really good thing for them. They have the coaches, they have the players, and they have the right chemistry and the good people. I just think keep winning and doing things the right way. And in so many ways, what KJ Henry says there with his own words, as I said, kind of confirms what Jeremy Birmingham just described in terms of the wait-and-see approach for recruits, and also I think confirms what many Georgia fans probably believe is actually going on. But what's interesting here, though, is, and the reason why I think this is something that kind of provides a glimmer of hope for Georgia fans, is because what you hear from Henry is that, yeah, right now Georgia may not be the school that I'm leaning to. I may not be, strongly considering Georgia ahead of the other schools around the South, but I've still got my eye on the Dogs. I am still looking to see what they're going to be able to put together in 2018. So what that tells you is that if Georgia does get the good season on the field in 2018, then it might could still impress a player like KJ Henry or someone like him. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be Henry that chooses to commit to the G. It could be someone who kind of fits some of the same kind of profile here. Some of these elite players who are kind of looking in on this process to see how things are going right now. And that, for me, really is the bottom line in this entire discussion. Georgia fans obviously know there is a wait-and-see approach going right now. The top four- and five-star guys that kind of came into this class with reckless abandon in the 2017 recruiting cycle, so far that's kind of gotten off to a slow start here in 2018. But when you hear Henry's words at DogNation.com, you certainly get the impression that elite prospects are still looking in on the Dogs. If Georgia does provide those wins on the field this season, then maybe some of those guys before the 2018 recruiting cycle is all said and done, maybe some of those guys will be in the mix for Georgia's 2018 class. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily with a daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thanks for being here with us on this Friday. We are preempted on the radio today. Georgia baseball, and by the way, we'll talk a little Georgia baseball before we're done today on the show, but Georgia baseball moves up because of some potential inclement weather in Athens this evening. So Georgia baseball this afternoon on 960 The Rev. We'll look forward to being back there on Monday, though, of course. And always on Facebook Live at 10 a.m. We appreciate you being with us for that. And if you listen to us on podcast form and iTunes at DogNation.com, on SoundCloud, however you get us, thank you so much for being a part of the show. And by the way, speaking of DogNation.com, you've still got a few more days to do this. Go to DogNation.com. There is a banner ad for you up at the very top of the page. I want you to click on this banner ad. And if you haven't already registered for our Dog Nation Invasion to the big game in South Bend this September, I want you to do that. Of course, the Dog Nation Invasion giveaway brought to you courtesy of Kroger. And all you got to do is go sign up, your name and all the important details that kind of go along with that, so we can contact you in case you win. And if you do win, what an opportunity it's going to be for you. It's not just a spot on the Dog Nation Invasion bus heading from Chicago over to South Bend this September, but it's also your chance to win airfare, tickets to the big game there in South Bend, lodging as well. It's really the whole nine yards, and it's all brought to you courtesy of Kroger. You can sign up at DogNation.com. That sign-up is going to remain active from now all the way through. I think it's 11:59 p.m. on May 19th, so go ahead and do that really quickly. You can be able to do that. We will have Jeff Sintel here on the show in just a moment. We'll talk to him about what we just said about KJ Henry. Before we bring on Jeff, though, let me also give you our Gator Hater Countdown. And, of course, you're on Dog Nation Daily. We always believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator Hater first and foremost. We believe this is supposed to be the most important rivalry of them all for the Georgia Bulldogs. And if you believe that, too, the best way for you to show that is to check out shopdognation.com. You can get your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts. We love these things. They've got the Dog Nation Daily logo on the sleeve. They've got the Gator Hater license plate on the front. Just a really good-looking t-shirt. You can check those out at shopdognation.com. And if you do so, we're going to give you free shipping on that. We've restocked all the sizes. It's all there for you at dognation.com. Let me also remind you, I was looking at forum.dognation.com, and I'm on there trying to find out what the juicy rumors are, what people are kind of saying about Georgia football behind the scenes. And, I saw a guy, I assume it was a guy. When you hear what he said, you're going to probably think it's a guy, too. He was talking about how, he was last minute doing his Mother's Day shopping, not sure what to do. And I suggested to him, I said, hey, listen, instead of trying to, fool around with, shopping for a gift or making reservations at some restaurant, how about you just cook a nice meal at home? Maybe something on the grill. That's a less pressure-packed situation. It's going to show some real thoughtfulness. It's going to show you that you kind of put some thought and some time and some care into what you're doing. And if you're trying to impress your mother, that might be the best way to do it this Mother's Day. And it's going to take, a lot of the stress out of your life, knowing that you can just have everybody over at the house and cook that meal. And that's true whether you're talking about cooking for your mom, your mother-in-law, your wife, who may be the mother to your own children, whatever that is. That opportunity to do just that may be the way to actually win Mother's Day this year. And of course, if you're thinking about doing that same thing, I mentioned that Kroger's bringing the Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to you. How about check out Kroger.com for how they may also be able to provide everything you need to make that Mother's Day meal go really well this Sunday or this Saturday, whenever you doing it. If you are going to do it right, the best way to do it is with Kroger Supermarket. So check them out, Kroger.com, for that. They'll make your Mother's Day great. Whatever your Mother's Day plans are, it'll be better because you did it with Kroger. So check them out. Of course, we appreciate them bringing the Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to you and to all of us. For now, though, let's find out about the latest in UGA recruiting. Let's welcome in Jeff Sintelier to Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, it's great to have you with us as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll say happy Friday and welcome Jeff Sintel here to the program today. A lot I want to talk to him about. But before I get into that, though, Jeff, let me take a moment to at least greet you and say how you doing today. Everything going well in your world?
Yes, sir, Brandon. Everything's great. I am applying good pressure to all my family, friends, and loved ones for being a great part of my day.
So we are obviously... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That includes you, Brandon. You always apply good pressure for me to come join you on your program.
That's exactly right. We're obviously live on Facebook in addition to the podcast forum and some of the people on Facebook talking about the pretty provocative story that you wrote that had some interesting quotes from Markavius Big Cat Bryant about why he didn't choose Georgia. And I want to get into some of that in a moment, but let me also start our conversation with what I was also talking about before you joined us here today on Dog Nation Daily to start the show. What you had kind of written from the quotes that K.J. Henry had given you a few days ago, and this notion that, you know, we've all, you know, thought about the idea of, hey, it is a wait-and-see approach for Georgia with its 2018 recruiting class. Henry certainly confirms that. We talked about Henry a little bit the last time that you're on, but the point that I'm making here is that I think that Georgia fans ought to take that as good news. And maybe it's not so much good news that Henry ends up being a part of the 2018 class, but maybe elite recruits like him really are still considering UGA. And maybe with that narrow window from if Georgia does prove itself before the end of the season and whenever this, you know, recruiting class comes together, maybe some of those minds can still be swayed of five-star and four-star big names like K.J. Henry. Is that the right read on this, in your opinion?
I think it's, well, Brandon, first of all, it's layered. I think the right read, especially for an out-of-state prospect that Georgia hopes to entice to come join the program, especially one with a lot of big-time, genuinely amazing options, I think that's what Georgia has to do. When Henry's looking really hard at a Clemson, he's looking really hard at an Alabama, that Georgia has to just get on their level, and they can't do it with cool coaches and great pitches and homespun mentality and charm, facilities even. They've got to bring the wins to the table too. And I think in K.J. Henry's case, he sees a lot of things he likes about Georgia. His family sees a lot of things they like about Georgia. But the one thing they don't like, perhaps, is how that record and on-field success doesn't match up to what they're hearing from everyone else. A great example is Virginia Tech. He likes Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is recruiting him hard. It is one of those nationally, at least, you know, regionally known power programs for pumping out a lot of talent. They have new coaches as well. They have a new coach that was brought in just maybe the same timeline that Kirby Smart was. And that defense there was pretty good. And they did it without the pass rushers they were looking for. And they still won a lot of big games. I think that's the big thing, the big challenge for Georgia, because there's all the pieces are in place for Georgia. And K.J. Henry even feels that Georgia, from what he sees and when he looks around that locker room and watches a little film, he thinks Georgia should be one of those 10 or 11 win teams. And he wants 2017 to be the reality that matches those expectations.
Let me talk to you about another five-star prospect here just for a moment, because you were with me on SEC Country Live yesterday. People can check that out every Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook page. And we talked a little bit about Zamir White. And you made the point on the show yesterday that we've really made here a few times, and you've been very good about explaining this over and over, that while you might consider White a lean, and by you I mean anyone who's following this, might could consider Zamir White to be a Georgia lean, when he makes his announcement on June 27th, this is not the kind of thing that's in the bag necessarily for Georgia. And there really is going to be a lot of sweat on the brow here between now and then in terms of, you know, keeping White interested in UGA and not, you know, veering his attention towards a place like Ohio State, where I know Emory Jones is recruiting him hard, and other spots there. This is still a tough battle between now and the end of June, correct?
It is, and I think, you know, Zamir's reached the point probably with his recruiting, and I think he reached it maybe a month or two ago, where he's just really oversaturated with everything. Like, when he visited Georgia like a measure of times, and like I think it was like two times in the matter of like a month. One of those times he wanted to see Georgia-Kentucky basketball game. That was him trying everything on at Georgia and finding that he really liked it. It fit, and he doesn't need to do any more recruiting. He doesn't need to do a lot more recruiting. He went up there and took a major trip to Ohio State. He brought his family. That was important, too, as well. I just simply think Zamir's at the point where he doesn't want to talk about recruiting with reporters, doesn't really want to talk about recruiting with his team. It's just a decision that he knows is coming, and it is going to be something. It's going to be something that he's going to have to make eventually. But right now, he's lucky that he's got some state track and regional track meets to participate in and try to chase some more hardware there. And he's also got his spring football practice to look at as well. And I just think that decision is going to be a combination of what Zamir thinks and what his family thinks. And anybody, anywhere else you read that or anything else you read, if they're not portraying it that way, then I don't think they're telling the whole story.
I think that's a really interesting point, Jeff, and I think that's important for all UGA fans to kind of think about as we head towards that expected date on June 27th when White does make his announcement. All right, let me ask you about a guy that has put Georgia in his top 10, and that's a transfer wide receiver, Jonathan Giles from Texas Tech. I assume Giles, how you pronounce the last name. Pretty good numbers for him. If he did move wherever he goes, he's not going to be eligible in 2017. It'll be 2018 before he's eligible. Should Georgia fans read anything into this other than, hey, he had 10 schools, Georgia was one of them? Is there any connection deeper than just a top 10 for Giles at the moment, you think?
Brandon, I don't think so, because when I – and I'll affirm something. It's not Giles or Giles.
Yeah, it's not like Max Sean Giles.
There's nothing exotic with the last name as far as I've been led to believe. I think, Brandon, that maybe – When I looked at that story and I saw that was happening, you know, that's another thing that kind of rivals the other Texas Tech guy.
You're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Everybody was talking about. And, you know, I just don't think that – I think taking in a 2017 transfer that won't be eligible to a 2018 season, I just think that kind of complicates the board for Georgia a little bit at receiver. I do feel there's a little bit of a connection there, and he likes the program. And maybe there's something about, hey, I want to get to 10 names as well. Because Georgia, if you look what they're doing with their recruiting board, they seemingly honed in on the two to three guys they really want at receiver. You read a recent report, Joshua Vance kind of has South Carolina slightly out ahead of Georgia now. And that's something that I'm sure a lot of recruiting fans that really follow the program a lot paid a lot of attention to. And then there's also Marquez Azard, and there's also Kyrus Jackson. Kyrus Jackson, if you read the site yesterday, you saw that somehow a 200-pound receiver could fling a shot put, a 12-pound shot put, 51 feet, and that's like 8 feet farther than even big man Torrey Johnson.
Yeah, that's an amazing performance. Jeff, I don't mean to cut you off, but I read that story from you, and I think your phrase was so appropriate. You called him an and guy. He's an athlete. You know, yeah. He has more than one thing. He's not just the speedy guy that you think of as receiver. He also brings some strength to the table with him as well, as proven by this skill with the shot putt. I was pretty taken aback by just how versatile of a physical specimen that he is.
Yeah, and he's one of those alpha dogs that Coach Coley has talked about. He wants for his guys, like Mel Tucker has his League of Shadows. And I tell you, Kyrus can be a one-man track team, but he's also a heck of a receiver. He just got open this week for the opening. So I think of Ezard, I think of Van, and I think of Kyrus Jackson at receiver for this year. But then also that well-stocked group in 2019, you got guys like Dominic Blaylock, you got Jaden Hazelwood there as well. You know, those are two guys Georgia would definitely love to have at receiver. What's Deshaun Sheffield going to do? Is he going to be a defensive back? Is he just going to wind up at Florida State and Georgia fans won't have to worry about that? There's a lot of good receivers in the state, and I even like Ramel Keaton out of Marietta a heck of a lot. He's a big-time playmaker. He's catching a lot of touchdowns for 2020 quarterback Harrison Bailey. So I just don't see where an out-of-state gentleman from Texas transferring in. I don't see how it benefits the program, especially if Georgia can see a lot of development from a guy like Matt Landers. And guys like Mark Webb and Trey Blunt by that time. That's what just has me shaking about taking in a Texas Tech transfer receiver. Just going to have to bring a lot of veteran elements to the program, kind of like what Javon Wims is doing right now.
You know, it's funny. This is about the only big issue when it comes to recruiting that I don't agree with you on. I mean, I agree with almost everything you say about everything. I think your perspective on this stuff is great. But this is like the one point where I think my just sort of natural tendency is really different than yours. I get really excited about every one of these possible transfers because I saw the impact that Maurice Smith made on the Georgia defense last year. And this guy put up, you know, this is to me not so much an argument for this particular receiver as it is transfer players in general. But, you know, this guy put up big numbers at Texas Tech last year. You know, if he was eligible for Georgia 2018, I mean, that's almost like getting a really high four-star player to me because, for the most part, you kind of already know that he can play at the college level. And, you know, as I said, this is not so much about the Texas Tech receiver as it is just the idea of transfer players. I have to admit, I get really excited about the possibility of adding transfers because, to a certain extent, you kind of already know that they are college-capable players, whereas the batting average for guys coming out of high school is going to be somewhat hit or miss.
Well, Brandon, I love that point, but it skews in two different directions for me as well. Number one, I'm all for the guy that's shown he can do it in the NCAA level and big-time, big-boy football. That's great and everything, but, you know, Jonathan Giles coming out was not an alpha athlete.
That's true.
He's a three-star athlete. And then the thing that I guess I apologize for not making the point clear, but when I think about Jonathan Giles and what he could bring to Georgia, he'd basically be bumping a guy like Kyrus Jackson, a guy like Marquez Ezard, a guy like Joshua Vance. He'd basically be bumping into their role because I don't believe he's 6 feet tall. He's about 5'11", about 185 from what I gather off the Texas Tech bio form where that information came out. And, yeah, he caught 13 touchdowns. Yeah, he caught 69 balls. But Georgia's offense is a lot different than the way a quick, active hummingbird receiver would get fed.
Very
like they would in the air raid offense that Mr. Kingsbury, the male model, might throw out there and tout at Texas Tech. So, to me, I would love the Jonathan Giles story a lot better, and I would rubber stamp it as go dog fans go crazy over this guy. If he didn't have a relationship like Mo Smith did with the Georgia fans and there wasn't a true tether to the program. And then number two, I would also love it a lot better if Jonathan Giles was 6'4" and 212 pounds. I think that's the guy that comes in that Georgia doesn't have a whole lot of guys that can do what he does. I mean, I mentioned Javon Wims from a veteran standpoint, but Georgia still needs to get those 6'4", 210, 212 pound receivers that look like those Julio Jones in the SEC, those big time go up and get it receivers. But Jonathan Giles just doesn't fit that spectrum.
That is a point very well made, Jeff. Jeff Owens, writing in the comment section, was talking about Georgia's need for a dual-threat quarterback. And let me ask you a question. I think I already know the answer to this. This may even be a dumb question. But do you think there's any chance that, even if it's just for a couple minutes one day after practice, Georgia gives Trey Bishop a look at as a dual-threat quarterback? The incoming prospect for the 2017 class, who Auburn had kind of thrown out there the possibility that he might play quarterback for them. He was a one-time Auburn commit, decommits. At Georgia, he's thought of as a defensive back, and that's the position he's probably going to play. Do you think Georgia gives Bishop a look there ever at any point in time?
I love the creativity there, Brandon. I love the thinking there from Mr. Owens. But if Trey Bishop got snaps at Georgia after practice just goofing around, the quickest, best role he would assimilate to in Georgia would be the Wildcat quarterback, the red zone quarterback, the guy that helps Georgia out in the red zone or maybe on a 3rd-and-3, something like that. We could run a lot of really good run-pass options. But here's the rub. I think Mecole Hardman can do that stuff very, very, very well. I think Terry Godwin can do that stuff very, very, very well. And I think Trey Bishop, if you ask me if we're going to get funky with Trey Bishop and his skill set, Georgia wants him at corner. They would love him at safety. Those are positions where they need a 6'2", 195-pound athlete that can burn a 4.3 with great hip turns and backpedal. But got to remember, they just pulled somebody out of the defensive backfield already with Mecole Hardman. I think if Mecole does what he does, starts making plays out the yin-yang and space for Georgia, and all those young defensive backs show out, including Trey Bishop, then I think McColl's permanent home will probably be on offense as well as kick returner at Georgia. I don't see him going back or floating around. And then if you move Trey Bishop over there, you kind of complicate that depth you already subtracted from with an elite athlete. If we want to talk about getting crazy with Trey Bishop, we could talk about on the other side of the ball. I think maybe the ideal spot would be at receiver for him to bring more size and more speed to the team on that other side of the ball. But Trey Bishop is a phenomenal athlete. He does a lot of things well. You know, Auburn was kicking the tires with him for a while at quarterback. But I think all those creative angles and ways to use Bishop, I think two things. One, I think Hardman and Goodwin can do that just as well as a Wildcat quarterback. And I also think maybe Bishop's better long-term spot at Georgia. If we had to look at offense alone, then I would think that would be at receiver. All that said, I think safety and corner are the way that Georgia wants to use him. And his abilities will allow Georgia to bid adieu to Mecole Hardman at cornerback for at least the upcoming season.
You mentioned Georgia's defensive backs, the kind of recruiting profile they're trying to push here for 2018, is that notion of being the League of Shadows. You wrote about this at DogNation.com the other day. Were you impressed with the latest UGA commit, Chris Mith's, his dad's comic book knowledge here? He already knew all about the League of Shadows, knew exactly what that was. Now, I'm not super plugged into comic books, so maybe a lot more people know about that than I do, but I was pretty impressed that his dad had a lot of that backstory, that League of Shadows mythology. He seemed to know a lot about that.
He did, and his dad's a really nice guy. I remember walking by him in practice, and he's like, "Hey, Jeff, what's up, man?" I said, "Hey, man." I think he said, "Hey, Sentel, what's up?" And I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And he shook his hand, and I was like, "Oh, man, we got, you know," it was in around Hayesville Charter, and I was thinking, "Man, that guy looks a lot like Chris." But I was like, "No, I can't be Chris," because the guy looked like he was all of about 30 years old. That's how young his dad looks. But I went over there and I asked to Chris and I talked to him. I was like, "Hey, is that guy in the red and blue shirt your dad?" He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Wow, that was really funny." And then we talked about League of Shadows. And me, Brandon, this is a way that I thought where people can think, you know, the fans can think Georgia's slow playing, Georgia's slow rolling. What can Georgia do to ignite the 2018 class? What's happening? What's not happening? To me, I think this is just really clever, creative, and cool. Everybody likes the edits. Everybody likes the superhero culture. Just look at the box office and the movies. And you've got Mel Tucker sitting on the throne with a scepter, commanding a trained group of assassins, mercenaries, and ninjas. And, you know, as I wrote in that piece, it was just a lot of fun to write, by the way. But as I wrote in that piece, Superman can't flip his own shadow on a curl route. Julio Jones can't flip his own shadow on a post out on a practice field. So Tucker and he wants his Bulldog safeties and defensive backs to be like shadows right on the man's hip and always there. He cannot be escaped. He owns the shadows. And for Georgia to get into that imagery with Ra's al Ghul and Bane and using, you know, terminology like that with their recruits, so their receivers are alpha dogs, their defensive linemen are the trench mob, and they're touting this stuff out in social media. It definitely shows the program is a little bit different than all the other edits you see out there of NFL draft picks or Heismans or guys in jerseys that are all kind of geared up looking toward the future. I think this is just a lot of fun. And when Chris told me that Mel Tucker basically DM'd him some names and a list and said, "Okay, these are all the League of Shadows. You can make up your own code name, or you could choose one of these other code names." You know, first of all, Brandon, it's not classified, man. If you were invited to join the League of Shadows, wouldn't your code name be, above all else, wouldn't it be the Gator Hater? Wouldn't
I would that have your to code be. Name, no, that'd have to be. That'd have to be my League of Shadows code name. I think that's a pretty fair assessment to make.
Pretty fair assessment. But
yeah,
like,
for sure.
You see all these guys, and, you know, there's Bane, the guy who broke Batman's back, and Chris Smith says, "Man, I'd love for that to be Trey Dean," and there's a guy named Deathstroke in there, and, you know, Bruce Wayne used to be part of the League of Shadows. That's how he got his training and how to do that, you know, all the martial arts and, you know, training and you know, the ninja-type stealth work that Batman always lives in those movies, but then he wasn't feeling it, and he drifted away from the League of Shadows, and the League of Shadows became his enemy. You know, I was asking Chris, and we were just kind of having fun with the topic. I was like, "Okay, so Mel Tucker is Ra's al Ghul. What does that make Kirby Smart? Is Kirby Smart like Bruce Wayne, or is Kirby Smart like Batman?" Or, you know, you could really play along with that imagery a little bit, and you could go, "Okay, Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker used to be with the League of Shadows. If you call the League of Shadows Alabama, they move on, and now they're the good guys." You know, you could have some fun with that
sure.
a little bit with that imagery and everything else. But all I know is this. Chris likes it. Georgia seems to be having a lot of fun with it on social media, and the prospects are reacting to it favorably. I'm sure every fan in there that's leaning in and listening to all this stuff and absorbing all this stuff, they wouldn't care if they showed up in Pokemon. They wouldn't care if they showed up in, like, whatever you want to say, Robin Hood themes or Transformers themes, whatever. As long as that meant Mr. Four-Star and Mr. Five-Star ended up signing with Georgia.
Yeah, listen, whatever works, Jeff. I can certainly speak for Georgia fans on that. League of Shadows, any kind of imagery you have to conjure up, if it gets guys interested in the 2018 class, that's something I think all Dog Nation is going to be in favor of. Let me get a couple quick issues before we let you go here. And you wrote about this at DogNation.com. Markavius Bryant, the four-star prospect who chose Auburn over UGA, kind of reflecting back on what – made Auburn the winner for him over Georgia and what potentially could have made LSU the winner over both of those schools there. And, you know, my takeaway on this, a little different than what I'm seeing in the comment section on Facebook Live. A lot of folks kind of focusing in on what he told you, that maybe Georgia pushed a little too hard there at the end. I'm not even sure I necessarily believe that. You know, sometimes I think you're forced to kind of offer an explanation for something, and that's maybe the first thing that pops in your mind. My takeaway on this is that Bryant is another example of late visits are tough. When a guy that you really want on your campus is making a late visit to Auburn or making a late official visit to LSU a couple weeks before signing day, you don't have that in your control. You can't control the outcome there. Whereas a lot of these offensive linemen didn't visit anywhere. You know, a lot of these other UGA commits of the class of 2017, their only official visit was to Georgia, and it makes it a lot easier to keep them in the fold. Isn't that ultimately what it came down to with Markavius Bryant? You know, traveling feet lead to wandering eyes?
Wow. Well, first of all, Markavius Bryant is going to be a guy that I'll look to as maybe the counterpoint to a lot of norms in recruiting. Like, most of the feedback I got on that story, and first of all, it took me about, I had to go Ed Orgeron probably and pound a monster drink to write all that out, because there were so, man, there were so many, like, twists and turns. There was, like, the Georgia silent commitment, and then there was the LSU phase, and then there was the Auburn phase, and you didn't know 30 minutes beforehand, and you asked him a year ago, it was Georgia, Georgia, Georgia all the way. If you asked him back in January, early January, it was Georgia, Georgia, Georgia all the way. The only silent commitment he made at all was the one to Georgia, and he felt relieved once he made that commitment. Lots of people read that, and they're like, I don't know if Markavius Bryant is being – they didn't know if those words were actually truthful. And man, I got to be a reporter. I'm not going to digest or dissect what a young man tells me.
Yeah.
He said all that information on the record. It sounded very genuine and from the heart, because everybody will read into those anti-Georgia things and, you know, too much good pressure. What does that mean? And then I really tried to balance that out and really not take the what somebody told me is, like, this is what Markavius Bryant would say in Congress if he was testifying about what happened with his decision. Considering all the hearings that the political theater has provided us with lately,
but sure.
You know, you learn things like he said that, you know, the hardest coaches to say no to were Kirby Smart and Kevin Shearer, and how basically when he came back upon it and he talked to them 2 to 3 weeks afterward that Kirby Smart and Kevin Shearer just wanted to congratulate him, wish him well, and they just wanted to know what else they could have done. And you know, Markavius said that those actions afterward, after there was nothing for them to gain, kind of reinforced just how he felt about those two men being good people, not just guys that wanted him to sign with Georgia. The interesting aspects I felt was that when he was shaky, or when Georgia appeared he was shaky as they were trying to get to those 26 signees and all those DBs they signed on signing day, Georgia was really after him hard. And what happens with hard is he was hearing from commitments. He was hearing from coaches. He was hearing from his community. He was also hearing from, you know, players that were committed to Georgia. And like, everybody was applying pressure to him with Georgia. And he didn't feel like the pressure from an LSU or an Auburn was quite the same. They were kind of just sitting back and waiting on him to make up his mind. And that's ultimately why he felt that kind of turned him off about Georgia. There's a passage in there that I know caught a lot of eyeballs where he said something to the effect of, if Georgia would have just came after me a little less harder and applied less good pressure, then he'd be there right now. That's a window into what he was thinking and feeling. And really, I think if that story shows nothing else, it shows that these decisions, and I'm going to kind of think in an 18-year-old's brain right away for a second, is if you have a choice to choose Miss Teen Georgia, Miss Teen Louisiana, or Miss Teen Alabama as your prom date, and all three of them are also Rhodes Scholars, great dancers, great dressers, and their dads are all vice presidents of Microsoft. Those are really hard decisions, especially for a young man to make. Every one of those decisions is going to be a great decision, but they still have to make one. And that's kind of why I think the way I led that story with Big Cat talking about make this decision for yourself, make this decision for no one else, because this is the one you're going to have to live with. But enjoy this hard process along the way, because you only get to do it once. And I thought that was the good prelude for everything else I was about to drop on everyone that I learned in the soap opera that was Big Cat Bryant's recruiting story.
I know I've kept you long, Jeff. Let me squeeze in this real, really quick, and then we'll let you get on to your Friday business here. But I hope people are checking out forum.dognation.com, because you're putting a lot of content in there that you really can't read from the Centel Intel at dognation.com. A quick, for instance, on this, some talk kind of came up about some of the work that Florida State and some of these other schools are doing in the 2018-2019 class in Georgia, and the way that some of these programs have just kind of blanketed the state with offers. And you kind of brought up the point in the forum, and I don't believe I've read this from you at DogNation.com. This was kind of a forum-only point about how, you know, Georgia's got to be more careful about its in-state offers than the other programs around the South have to be when they come into Georgia. They can throw that offer out there as a feeler. Georgia's got to sort of stand behind whatever it puts out there in-state. I thought that was a great point, but specifically the reason why I bring that up here today on Dog Nation Daily is because I hope people are reading the forum to kind of find some of those little nuggets from you here and there, kind of spliced into some of these forum threads. Really fun stuff, and a really good use of, I think, all of our time to kind of catch up with what you and other UGA fans are saying about Georgia recruiting there at forum.dognation.com.
We're trying to grow a lot of a sense of community there, and I know my bosses would love for me to post 8 stories a day. They would love for me to have a morning and afternoon and a noon intel and a bedtime intel and everything else like that. And I said, yeah, that'd be a quick way to get my kids to be never knowing their dad, and
sure,
my wife to probably be looking for a alternate dude that says grace before the table before every meal or something like that. But so what I do is I try to, instead of doing a morning, afternoon, and nighttime intel, is I try to drop a lot of things in there in the intel, maybe drop a nugget here or there that's not a full blown story. And in the case with that, Florida State, they can, and other schools can carpet bomb a lot of offers into the state of Georgia, but except for, I laugh here, the case with Florida State, they're not going to be a presence at Grayson High year in and year out, signing guys and having to stand by all those offers with integrity the way that Georgia will have to, being the in-state school. It's just viewed a little bit differently in the recruiting world. That was really big under the Mark Richt model at Georgia, and I still think that's something that Kirby Smart and his staff really takes a lot of stock into, is when this is an in-state kid, and you're going to be recruiting that school for years and years and years, as well as the schools in that county. Everyone knows that coaches talk and players talk, and I think a lot of times when you think about those in-state offers and standing by those offers, I think you have to place a greater deal of integrity behind that than maybe a school that's just flying in, dropping out offers just to see if they get a nibble, and then they can really start zeroing in on a program, on a prospect, after that nibble has taken place.
Hey, Jeff, I really appreciate your time. Sorry for keeping you so long, but always great stuff, both here at Dog Nation Daily, the Wednesday night Facebook Lives, of course, brought to you by Kroger, in the forum as well. You're all over the place there at dognation.com. We just appreciate all of it. We hope you have a great weekend. We'll look forward to speaking to you here on our show again very soon.
Hey, everybody. Happy Mother's Day. Tell your moms in your life, your mom, your grandma, your wife, everybody in your life, happy Mother's Day this weekend. Don't forget about that. And hey, why don't you surprise Brandon with your own League of Shadows code name across the rest of this podcast and this Facebook Live, and tell him what your code name would be if you were able to join the League of Shadows for Dog Nation as well.
Love to see that there in the comment section. Jeff, we'll talk to you soon.
See you.
And we'll do our SEC 3 right now.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff, as always, from Jeff Centel. Of course, looking forward to being with him for our Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend. Don't forget, one of our fine sponsors for that is Kroger. And, of course, I hope you're checking out Kroger right now this weekend. As I said early in the show, getting ready for Mother's Day. You got the spring cookouts. I know a lot of y'all have these graduation parties and things like that. And, by the way, graduation used to be one of these things that you did when you graduated college or high school, and now it's 5th grade, eighth grade, kindergarten. My son's graduating from pre-K. There's a lot of different kinds of graduation parties coming up over the next few weeks. Well, whatever kind of graduation party you're having, best way for you to get ready for it and get everything you need, including the balloons, the flowers, the plates and napkins, the food, whatever. It's all there for you at Kroger. Check them out, Kroger.com. And, of course, we're looking forward to being with them, just like Jeff Sintel and hopefully you as well, for our Dog Nation invasion to South Bend this September. All right, let's do the SEC through here. Some of the big news around the SEC, and of course we talk about this each and every day, Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country Facebook page for SEC Country Live. One of the big stories, though, around the league here this week is what Barry Trammell, I think it's Trammell, however you say his name, writer from the Oklahoman, on with Paul Feinbaum. And according to what Barry Trammell says on the Feinbaum show, he says that Oklahoma fans are done with the Big 12. I'm reading this tweet from Feinbaum about this. The quote is, "They are ready for the SEC, and it's fairly overwhelming. It's wide support for the SEC that Oklahoma would like to come into the Southeastern Conference." And obviously that's the kind of thing that gets your attention. That's a big-name program, potentially, you know, at least according to a writer that's been on the scene there for a while, showing some interest there in the Southeastern Conference. I think the problem here now, though, is while there would have been a point in time in the past where adding Oklahoma into the SEC was really a no-brainer, I don't know that that's necessarily true anymore for a couple of reasons. First of all, if Oklahoma were to come, it sounds like they may have to bring Oklahoma State with them. You know, they don't want to leave the other in-state institution kind of laying in the lurch there, especially if the Big 12 would all but dissolve if something like this were to take place. And bringing in two schools, splitting one state in the SEC, kind of dilutes the revenue pool a little bit. And listen, these college conferences are not going to dilute that revenue pool at all. And this would be an example of, you know, kind of doing that. And, by the way, TV contracts are not what they once were. I mean, we just saw all these people get fired for ESPN, and part of the reason why these folks got fired was because of the money that ESPN has promised in terms of rights fees to some of these sports leagues for televising games moving forward. The thought is that these prices are going down, not up. So this notion that if you added two more schools to the SEC, you now have more value and be able to renegotiate that contract, odds are you weren't. You would not be able to. The money the SEC makes would then just be split 16 ways as opposed to 14 ways. So I'm not sure it makes financial sense for any conference to add more teams moving forward. Even a power program like Oklahoma to the SEC, not even sure that makes sense moving forward. Anwar Richardson, a writer from Rivals.com who's been following the Malik Zaire situation for a while, has an interesting tweet out. He says about Malik Zaire's interest in Texas. I'm going to read this. Of course, Zaire, the former Notre Dame quarterback, potentially considering Florida. He says, this is, I guess, a quote from Zaire, "It's still the four schools. That means Harvard, Florida, Texas, Wisconsin." He says Harvard is a real option. "I really think he likes Texas," Anwar Richardson says. "He just doesn't know if they wouldn't suck him in for insurance in case the kid, Shane Bouchel," that's the Texas quarterback, "doesn't get it done. He refuses to be a backup at this point. He is very good if given a chance, a fair chance to show it." So it sounds like what Malik Zaire is kind of wanting to do here is get a guarantee from somebody that he's going to be the starter. Maybe Texas is not going to give him that. I don't know that Florida would give him that either with Felipe Franks there. I would assume that Zaire would become the favorite over Florida, but maybe not the guarantee to be that starting position there in Florida. So maybe he's looking at a place like Wisconsin or maybe even Harvard, a place where he knows that he can go and play. The other thing I think is interesting about this story, though, from Anwar Richardson, he has gone from saying that the announcement would take place on May 19th, where Zaire was going to transfer, to now on Twitter, Richardson says he may announce his decision next Friday, which gives you a little wiggle room, which kind of suggests that maybe Zaire is considering Florida a little more here, because if he postponed past Friday, that's just more likely, I think, that he does eventually choose the Gators because of those SEC spring meetings where the rule would need to be changed that you would even allow Malik Zaire to come to Florida. A postponement gives that more of a chance to happening. But as I said yesterday in SEC Country Live, is there a chance that maybe Zaire's best choice is somewhere else other than the SEC? That maybe when he looks at, you know, who Florida plays this season, Michigan, good defensive team, Florida State, good defensive team out of conference, having to play Georgia with 10 starters returning, having to play LSU, that's just too many good defenses on one team's schedule. And maybe Zaire looks at a place like maybe Texas if he becomes the starter there against those much weaker Big 12 defenses. Maybe that's the wiser decision for Malik Zaire to make. By the way, speaking of SEC Country Live, We had a pretty interesting conversation on the show yesterday where we kind of talked about the most indispensable players in the SEC. And, you know, Mike kind of talked about Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American who I host the show with, kind of talked about it from, hey, the perspective of the quarterback, what Nick Fitzgerald is at Mississippi State. That's the kind of guy that if he goes down, Mississippi State's not beating anybody. That might be true. I also talked about it from the perspective of LSU and Arden Key, the big defensive star returning. LSU's got really fewer returning starters this season than any of the main, you know, power teams in the SEC. They need a nucleus to build around. Key provides them that. But in the midst of having that conversation on SEC Country Live, it also got me thinking about the same kind of thing for Georgia. I mean, can't we make a case that the Georgia player that we can least afford to see Georgia suffer an injury with, the guy that would hurt Georgia the most if he goes down to injury, isn't that guy probably Trent Thompson, who, much like Arden Key, missed spring practice but is expected back here this summer? Assuming he's healthy, assume he's ready to play, isn't it true that nobody on the Georgia roster does what Trent Thompson is able to do? And if you're thinking about true indispensable players, true players that you can't live without, isn't he the guy for Georgia that probably fits that bill more than anybody else? I think if you're having that conversation specifically about the Dogs, he's probably the name that comes up. Before we wrap up the SEC through here and get ready to wrap up the show, let me also squeeze this in here real quick. Now, some of y'all have asked me to kind of cover some of these spring sports a little more closely, and I'm trying, you know, to understand, follow what's going on here and provide some of that to you. Here is kind of where things stand for Georgia in terms of a baseball, softball situation. Georgia this weekend in Athens plays Mississippi State. Mississippi State is a top 10 team. This is a tough matchup for Georgia. But there is something on the line here. Georgia, I believe, is currently a game back in terms of qualifying for the SEC tournament next week, and they're behind Tennessee. Now, Tennessee has to make the road trip to Kentucky. That's obviously a tough matchup for the Vols. So I guess, if I'm doing the math here, Georgia needs needs 2 of 3 from Mississippi State, assuming that Tennessee gets 1 of the 3 against Kentucky somehow, some way. Georgia's got to make up that one-game deficit. According to GeorgiaDogs.com, Georgia does have the tiebreaker over Tennessee, beat the Vols in a series earlier this season. So Georgia does still have its SEC tournament hopes alive. A lot of that's based on the fact that Georgia beat Kentucky in a series last weekend, but that's the case there. As you also probably know, those of you who care about this, Georgia did not qualify for the SEC softball tournament, but they are essentially still a top 25 team in the country, so they're going to try to hope they're included in that field when it's announced on Sunday night. I think that's 10 p.m. on ESPN2. We'll see if Georgia qualifies for the NCAA softball tournament after missing out on the SEC tournament. That's the situation with Georgia spring sports, and we'll make that your SEC through. As we wrap up the show here today, let me also send out some congratulations to a former Georgia football player. How about David Boss Andrews, who was a non-drafted free agent acquisition of the New England Patriots, but has become that team's starting center and has now just signed a contract extension with the Patriots that's going to run through 2020. Now, on the one hand, I'm incredibly proud for Andrews, who, you know, people who've spent time around him, I know, are huge fans of him personally, not just the player that he is, but the kind of guy that he is. So seeing him find NFL success is the kind of thing that's going to, I think, instill a lot of Georgia fans with a sense of pride. But for the people who follow the NFL, isn't this just another head-scratcher? How is it that half the teams in the league can't seem to draft an offensive lineman, and the Patriots pull a non-drafted free agent, and now he's one of the anchors of their future offensive line? Pretty clearly, nobody does it like they do in the NFL, and it's good to see Boss Andrews be the beneficiary of that. Hope you have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day. We'll see you on Monday.